Welcome to the Caving Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Pelser, chairman of the Central Indiana Grotto. If you're just discovering this podcast, welcome. If you're already a member of a grotto, excellent. If you're wondering what the heck a grotto is, I'm glad you're wondering. A grotto is a local chapter of our national organization, the National Speleological Society, or NSS. The NSS is dedicated to the study, exploration, and conservation of caves and karst resources. Caving is, of course, the term we use for exploring caves. Some people also use the fun word spelunking, though we tend to shy away from that term because we say it's a term for amateur cave exploring. And since cave exploration can be dangerous if you don't do it right, we encourage you to join a grotto and get some education as to the correct way to cave. And in doing so, you'll make friends to go with. You'll be able to maximize this wonderful and exciting experience we call caving. So there's my recruitment spiel. And joining a grotto is usually cheap. For my grotto, it's $15 a year. This month's episode is a roundup of my grotto's annual event, Indiana Cave Capers, which was the first weekend in August this year. I set up a couple microphones near registration and just talked to whoever wanted to chat about caving and what they were up to that weekend. That's coming up in just a bit. First of all, I want to thank a couple sponsors. Organic Robot on Etsy. My buddy Charlie hooked me up with some great caving podcast t-shirts, so I've got to mention his Etsy store. This is the best caving-related apparel you can find. It's not for caving. You wouldn't want to ruin these clothes. No, it's great t-shirts, sweatshirts, and hoodies with caving, camping, hiking, biking, climbing, and other outdoor themes. Charlie is an excellent designer, and most of his designs are printed on moisture-wicking fabrics, which is great for us weekend warriors because we get awfully sweaty doing what we do. Most of his designs have won awards at the NSS Salon, and I personally own about a dozen of his shirts. They're great. Check them out and proudly display your love for caving and the outdoors by picking up some new shirts at Organic Robot on Etsy. That's one word, Organic Robot on Etsy. We're also sponsored by Swago, one-time maker of some of the best caving packs you could buy. They're no longer making packs, though, because of a supply issue. You can hear the whole story about that on last month's episode on cave packs. But I can speak for almost everyone I've talked to about this. We want those cave packs back. People want their Swagos. And as soon as he figures out his materials issue, believe me, you'll hear about it. In the meantime, help support Scott and Swago by checking out some of his other products like chicken loops, webbing loops you can wear around your ankles to aid in vertical work or to attach gear so you can easily drag stuff through crawlways. He also makes these great accessories for your Cinto compasses called sight lights, glow-in-the-dark attachments that help you read your sights on compasses and clinometers without shining a second light on the face. He also makes these polycarbonate sight light shields that protect these instruments from the rigors of cave survey that come with the sight lights pre-attached. You can check those out at swagogear.com. Okay, some podcast news. I don't know what's been happening, but listenership has really spiked. Usually I get a bunch of listeners the week I release a new episode and then it tapers off by the end of the month. By the way, new episodes always post on the first of every month. I don't know. I guess word is getting out. I even heard from NSS President Gary Schindel, who tuned in last month and shot me an email thanking me for doing the podcast. It's just unreal. I didn't know how this was going to go when I launched it over a year ago, but so far people seem to like what I'm doing here. I've gotten a lot of requests to interview people. I'm trying to get to those people, but logistics make interviewing local Indiana cavers much easier than coordinating with those out of state. That said, I want to get some Skype or FaceTime interviews scheduled with some non-Indiana cavers so I can talk to some legendary figures outside of my home state. But until then, I thank you for your patience and your encouragement. Everyone has been so cool. If you want to email me, you can find me at alpineproductions@gmail.com. alpineproductions@gmail.com. Well, Indiana Cave Capers 2017 was a big success. Maybe you were there. We had over 200 people join us at the Harrison County Fairgrounds in Corydon, Indiana, home to the longest cave in the state, Binkley. We had several lead trips through that cave. We had a banquet presentation on recent discoveries in that cave. We had trips going all over the area. I was actually able to go caving. I thought I'd be stuck at registration all weekend, but I actually got to go thanks to Ron Adams' daughter, Rosalie, who watched registration while I was caving. Thanks, Rosalie. actually went with Ron to a cave called King's Cave. A little short trip, but it was fun. And we everybody just had a blast. We had free beer donated by Sun King Brewing in Indianapolis. Full disclosure, that's my wife's employer. So we know how to party, and boy, did we. And I was glad to get to talk to a few cavers who were willing to chat at my mobile setup near registration. So that's what we're doing this month. We're going to hear from some brand new cavers, some relatively new cavers, some longtime cavers, and I even got to talk to the legendary Bonnie Armstrong, who, upon hearing that adjective used to describe her, she's probably blushing. But Bonnie, thanks so much for talking to me. She made it all the way to Indiana from Utah to go caving. But we'll start with this guy, who we were happy to have all the way from Milwaukee. He and his daughter just got into caving about a year ago, and they came down to hang out. Let's go to live on tape to Cave Capers 2017.
It's Christopher Walker. I've been caving for 1 year.
1 year?
1 year.
What was your first cave?
Oh, what was the first cave? I don't remember the
first cave.
Wait, hold on. I think I can...
Where are you from?
From Milwaukee.
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 Well, that was a nice long drive then.
It was.
Thanks for coming all the way down to Corydon.
No problem. Thanks for having us. We're very excited to be here.
There's some of the best caves in the Midwest down here.
That's what we're told. We're excited to get in there and take a look for ourselves.
So the first cave then was in Wisconsin?
No. The first cave was actually in Kentucky.
In Kentucky. All right.
Yes. We came out last year. For Speedio Fest?
Yeah, all right.
All right, how about you? How long have you been caving?
Oh, I've only been caving about 7 years.
Excellent.
I mean, compared to most of the people here,
oh, yeah.
I'm a relative newcomer. But
absolutely. No, I've noticed that once people get into it, they really tend to get into it.
There are some lifers, that's for sure. And I mean, this being the 64th Indiana Cave Capers,
right.
I mean,
right.
it's amazing the history that gets wrapped up in an event like this.
How many Cave Capers have you actually been to?
Me, myself, five,
okay.
I think. But there are some people here who have been to, well, former chairman of the NSS and... multi-term chairman of the CIG, the grotto that puts this on, Tom Ray, who is here, I believe has been to over 50 Cave Capers.
Wow. Amazing.
So, yeah.
All right.
Yeah, he's somewhere here hanging around tonight.
Well, we're pretty happy to be a part of this esteemed class of cavers.
So how often would you say you get to go?
At this point, it's been pretty sporadic. I'd say twice last year. And this will be our first time this year.
Nice. Is this your first time caving in Indiana?
It is.
Nice.
It is.
Have you looked at the list? What do you think you're going to do tomorrow?
We looked. I think we're going to go with Binkley.
Nice.
And
classic.
We were also looking, I think, at King's Cave for Sunday.
Yeah.
So hopefully
King's Cave is a little about a half mile cave down here, and it's a lot of fun from what I hear. I've not been. But.
All right. Are you from Indiana then, or?
I'm from southeastern Indiana,
okay.
And I live in Indianapolis, and of course, go to grotto meetings every month because I have to.
Sure.
But are you part of a grotto up there?
I am. We're part of the Windy City Grotto.
Oh, okay, yeah. So, we've got a long history with the Windy City Grotto, a partnership, and actually one of its founding members is here tonight.
Oh, is he?
Dick Blends, who he's actually right over there. He helped to found the Windy City Grotto back in the 50s or 60s.
All right.
Yeah, he owns Buckner Cave in Indiana.
Ah, really?
Yeah,
excellent.
So he's a longtime Indiana caver.
Okay. So that looked pretty tough, though. Buckner Cave.
Buckner's not bad.
No?
Buckner's a classic, yeah.
Okay.
No, that one's one that everybody's done. There are some hard parts. But it's one of those caves that gives you a little bit of everything.
All right.
And it'd be a one to check out if you want to come back down to Indiana and do some Indiana caving.
Yeah, we definitely intend to do that.
That's a classic. That's right. One that everybody, I mean, that's a badge of honor to have done that one.
Are there any others that you would recommend?
In Indiana? Definitely. All of the Indiana Karst Conservancy properties,
okay.
Like Sullivan Cave, Wayne Cave, Buddha Cave,
One of the caves on this year's list for capers is Robinson Ladder. It's probably the farthest north cave on this year's capers list, but it's a good one. Okay. It's a short cave. You can do it pretty quick. There's some historic signatures in there.
Hmm.
Shiloh Cave is another IKC-managed property, and that one's very limited access, but that's a really good one. Any of those,
excellent.
I would say.
All right.
Yeah. So why do you think you like it so much? Why do you think you like caving?
For me, I think it's more an interest in doing something a little bit unusual. I like being outdoors. My first interest in caving probably had to be more of a curiosity about some of the insects and the insect species that are underground.
Yeah.
Cave crickets are interesting enough. And then you've got a whole host of reptiles and amphibious, herpetology side of things.
Yeah.
That you won't find anywhere else.
Is this a professional interest to you? Like, what do you do for a living?
No, it isn't a professional interest for me.
Oh, okay. Well,
I do nothing.
Either way.
Right. But I have a long time interest in herpetology, and also I've been involved in a little bit of lepidoptery and myrmecology in the past. So those interests continue
nice.
To carry on.
There's plenty of that you can observe down here in Indiana, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for coming.
Of course.
I appreciate you coming on the Caving Podcast.
Not a problem. Thank you for having us.
Enjoy your weekend.
I sure will. You do the same.
And I have to congratulate Christopher. He and his daughter actually won the big door prize at the banquet, the 300-foot PMI rope. I don't think they've done any vertical yet, but maybe they will now. Either that, or maybe you could buy it off of them if you know them. Thanks for coming down, Christopher. Come back to Indiana anytime. And that cave we mentioned, King's Cave, you may remember from earlier, I did get to go. And I hope you did too, Christopher. Okay, maybe you've seen this guy's videos around the internet. Raymond Mal shoots and edits some of the best caving videos you have ever seen.
Should I use like a British accent or?
You do whatever you want.
Nice. No, my name is Raymond, Raymond Mal, and I'm actually from Pennsylvania, but I just moved out to Indiana this past October, so coming up on a year in the area, and the grotto I was with out there was fantastic. They really got me into caving, but the Indiana grotto out here is incredibly active, so I've been really happy with all the cave trips I've got to go on. I thought, I'd be happy to get one cave trip in a month during the summer, and I think I've averaged about two at least month.
You've been prolific.
Yeah, I'm getting out as much as I can, which I don't think my wife's quite so happy with, being out every other Saturday and then coming home and living in an apartment complex. I can't really hose my clothing off, so I've got to take it into the shower and clean it off there.
Oh, just take it to the laundromat and distract the manager.
I saw Joe Kinder, the previous chairman, posted a picture on Facebook the other day of his caving clothing in a laundromat washing machine, and I guess he couldn't find one of the ones that has the lid, so you can't see all the dirt.
Yeah.
His was
well,
the big glass
the
front.
The front loaders are way better anyway. Those are the industrial ones, so
yeah,
that'll do the job. I mean, you won't bind those up the way you will the top loaders.
It was
so really, you're doing them a favor.
It was solid brown, the wash water. It looked like it had a covering. You couldn't see any of the clothing.
Tip the manager, make friends with the manager. That's how you do it.
I should. I feel bad, but I should find a place and sneak in. But
of course, if you do hose it down, you can just do it at home and it'll be fine. But
that's true.
But I go for the easy route. Well, anyway, so if anyone has this is kind of how I'm going to reference you. If anyone follows the caving subreddit, you always post your videos there, and they're awesome.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. Like most people, they take a GoPro on a caving trip, and you see this little tiny pinhole of light, and you can't really see anything. You do really well at lighting and showing only what is good, only what turns out from your videos. And you get decent audio, too. And, of course, you put music over top of it. And when you explained how you do these videos at the grotto meeting, it gave me, I got a kick out of it. So walk us through how you put together these caving videos.
Sure. Well, when I get into the cave, I try to record as much as I can. The GoPro, I get about an hour and a half worth of video out of it. And with a 2-3-4 hour cave trip, I usually get about an hour and a half worth of video.
And for most people, when they get that much video, they end up putting like a 14-minute video on YouTube, and they get 7 views, and they wonder, why isn't anyone watching my stuff? But you edit things down to below 8 minutes, I would say.
Exactly. That was a big thing that I found when I was getting into caving. I couldn't find any good videos of the caves that I was actually going to, so sometimes I'd have a map and a general description of the actual cave, but I didn't know like how much of it was crawling or how much of it was water or how big the rooms were. And the videos that I could find were all boring videos that I had to skip through and didn't really show the stuff that I found exciting. And so when I started getting video done, I really wanted to edit them down and actually make videos that showed the exciting parts and the stuff that I found interesting. So there's much for me, I think, going back and watching them and reliving the cave as they are for hopefully other people that hear about a cave and want to go to it and can watch a video first and really see what they're getting into or what a specific route in a cave looks like.
So then what's your process when you get home after a cave trip? You said you get a 6-pack and you just edit?
I think the last trip I did, the video came out just under 8 minutes, and that took a bottle of wine and 4 hours worth of editing to get down to that 7 minutes.
And that was the trip to Sullivan, right up to the Colossus?
Yeah, we finally, that was my second trip trying to make it to the Colossus. The first time it was flooded out.
Yeah.
And that video is up there too. But this one, we made it. We made it all the way through. And this group was kind of quiet. It was me and Wes and Carl. Tuttle was leading the trip, and Adrian was with us. And pretty solid group, so we made really good time and we were very quiet, so editing the video was a little bit easier because with a larger group of good friends that are talkative,
yeah,
you really have to cut out, you know, words and actually cut out audio and quiet things down so you don't get in the middle of like private conversations, which can be awkward in a video.
Yeah, what happens in the cave stays in the cave kind of thing.
The music helps with that too. Like, yeah, it's not apparent that all of a sudden the audio got really quiet. But if you're listening, you can hear the music seems a little louder and there's less splashing when people are talking about private stuff. But I cut everything up and I go through, and then I realize at the end of the video it's like 14 minutes long, like you said, and I've got to go back through and
pare it down
and cut stuff down. So it's a long process.
What cave videos, and you've done a lot of them, what video has gotten the most views so far?
The Shiloh video.
Oh, yeah, that was a water park when you went there.
I know, the water was super high that time too. That video I posted it on Facebook first before I'd started the YouTube channel. I think on YouTube it's gotten quite a few views, but on Facebook alone, between the number of shares it got, I think something like 1,600 views just being shared around Facebook.
So
I was really surprised.
For a cave video, that's a lot.
Yeah.
That's an awful lot.
But it's apparently a cave that only 60 people get to go in a year. They're pretty strict with the parking, the owners are. And so the water itself just makes it an exciting video. And I think a lot of people enjoyed that. That was one of my favorites too, I think, going back and watching it.
I've only been to that cave once, and I've always wanted to go back. And I wish I could have gone that weekend, because it just looked like that looked incredible.
The back section, the long... back to the one waterfall, the like U-shaped waterfall, which is apparently not usually overflowing all the way around the U like that.
I don't remember it being like that when I was there.
The water was pouring in from the ceiling from everywhere. You turn your head and you're just being rained on from every different direction, all the way down that passage, that long passage, starting from, I think there's a spray painted area that says like bad air or warning, like gas.
ominous.
I guess at some point someone thought there was bad air back there. And starting from there back, it's just, in that video anyway, it was just a constant barrage of water from every direction all the way back to that waterfall.
This was after a big rain event. We got like, I don't know, I would say, you know, one or 2 inches in a 12-hour period, like the day before or that morning or something like that. It was a significant rain event.
Yeah.
And Shiloh is especially that Black Damp Formation Passage is a significantly wet cave, certain parts of it. So it was insane back there.
I'm told the gate is like 2.5 feet tall or something like that, that you actually go through. And I was
And you've
told
usually got to swim through that. But in this, you had fairly low airspace.
It was almost all the way to the ceiling up that gate. And I didn't know what the situation on the other side of the gate was, so trying to push my feet through that first and then realizing that it doesn't just drop on the other side and now I got water coming up in my face. It wasn't super pleasant, but definitely made for great video.
So if if you listening right now do not know Raymond, then you do not know that he has an enormous beard. And have you gotten into vertical work yet?
Just the vertical caving workshop that the CIG put on in February.
You've only been on rope a couple of times and in a controlled environment. Did you have any trouble with the beard?
I absolutely did. So the first thing that we worked on at the CIG's vertical workshop was changeovers. So we put on our ascenders and we'd go a couple feet up in the air and then practice a transfer changeover to a figure eight descender. I didn't have a rack available, so I was practicing with the figure eight. And the first or second time I did my changeover, two things happened. I wrapped the rope around the figure eight wrong, so I could go absolutely nowhere. So I had to reattach all of my ascending gear and climb up a few feet. And in my haste to get back down, I let my beard slip into the figure eight, and at that point, there's nothing I could do.
No, there really isn't.
But let it rip my beard hair out, and you could just see it pulled up in, and then there was beard hair laying on the floor around where we came down. And I didn't bleed, so
yeah, but it had to have been heartbreaking.
It was not. It was not a good feeling.
I mean, there are some people that have long beards, and they just look like shit. You look like you actually kind of take care of it, or at least you're lucky enough to look like you take care of it. It's a beautiful beard. And for you to have lost a chunk of it, I mean...
I know. I cried a little on the inside, but I didn't want to let anyone else see me.
Would you say you have a favorite cave?
Not at this point. I really had just got into caving 2 years ago. I saw Facebook has those this time last year, or your Facebook memories that pop up. And my first cave video that I did was one of the first caves I'd ever done in Pennsylvania. And that was, I think, almost exactly 2 years ago now.
What cave was that?
It's called Wind Cave. It's in Pequoia, Pennsylvania, or maybe Pequoia. I don't know how to pronounce it. But it's a power plant property that you can hike up into. And it's a tectonic cave. And I think it's the largest tectonic cave on the East Coast, or perhaps the United States. It's
very cool.
I want to say 1,000 or 2,000 feet of passage. I could be completely off there. You can spend, you know, a good 2-3 hours crawling around in this cave. And a lot of large rooms and some breakdown crawls and some pits that you can climb down into, and got a little bit of everything in there.
So only having done it 2 years, you can probably look back and pick out what you might say your favorite cave trip was. Do you have one?
I think my favorite cave trip was probably, you were on it, to Buckner.
Oh, you'd say that's your favorite?
Yeah, man.
That's awesome.
The crawl in was fantastic. That 450 foot some crawlway was great. And then I still haven't done the circle route?
The circle, classic, yeah.
Instead of doing that, you took me down into the waterfall passage.
I hijacked it was his trip, and I took most of the people down the waterfall passage.
That was
great. You got to do the circle route then.
I know. I need to get back into that to do the circle route. So that'll be another video I look forward to doing. And I don't know, there was something about that waterfall passage. It was a long crawl, but
it's really
every
cool.
time you got tired and you were feeling overheated, you just lay down in the water. And the walls were smooth, so you didn't get your clothing caught up, none of your gear was getting snagged on anything, and you weren't getting your elbows and wrists or
and it's just snug enough to make cavers comfortable.
Yeah. And you get a nice waterfall to climb down at the end. So that was exciting. And outside of that, I guess my favorite cave to revisit is Donahue, because the Donahue side of Dog Hill Donahue has something for everybody. If you want to crawl, you can crawl. If you want to get muddy, you can get muddy. If you just want to...
You can climb a little bit.
Yeah, walking passage. I still haven't seen probably 50% of that cave, not including the Donahue or the Dog Hill side, which I haven't done at all yet. But I guess Carl Tuttle has some spots back there that I guess aren't on the map he wants to take me to.
Or so he says.
Yeah, so he says. There's still a crawl, I think, called the Peanut Butter Crawl that I haven't done that's super muddy and tight. So, yeah, and then a good bit of stuff past that, I don't know if it's a bathtub, but I've been through all the way out the
other the little ear dipper exit at the flowstone? Yeah.
There's some stuff on the other side of that I haven't explored.
Plenty of stuff you can do in there. What are you planning on doing this weekend at Cave Capers? I know you're leading a trip. When is it? Sunday?
Saturday. I think Bryant's Cave, which the description makes it sound like a nice, easy cave, and I haven't been, so that'll be fun. We'll see how many people sign up. And then Sunday, if we have the key, I think I'm doing the Devil's Graveyard, which is a bit of a I think it's like a 12-foot drop to start, which we could do with a hand line. and then a nice slope down and some formations. And I haven't been in that one either. So assuming we have the key, I'll be doing those two this weekend. Missing my chance to get into Binkley, but I did that 9-hour trip this past weekend, and I'm still sore from that. So I'm not really looking to crawl around and get muddy in Binkley. And I think my wife will appreciate if I come home without my gear being too muddy. So these two caves seem like they'll be nice and clean.
Well, good. Well, thanks for talking with us, and enjoy your weekend.
My pleasure. Thank you, Matt.
And since this interview, Raymond has gotten into vertical and released two more videos from this past weekend, a trip that he and I did together with a couple other friends. Paul Uglum led us. He was featured on the podcast last year. We bounced a couple classic Indiana pits, Storms Pit and Green Eye 1. Great work as always, Raymond. Now, for another longtime casual caver, she came with my friend Rob Strickland to hang out for the weekend and had a great time at Capers.
My name is Kelly Trimble. I'm from Indianapolis, Indiana, and I've been caving since I was about 12 years old.
Okay, and if you don't mind, what is your age now?
My age is 57.
Okay, so it's been a long time.
45, according to my calculations,
A little back of the envelope.
Right, indeed.
Inside my head math. Okay, so what was your first cave?
My first cave was Twin Caves in Spring Mill State Park.
Okay,
in a boat.
In the boat. Okay, so
in
you
the
did
boat.
The boat tour.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Did the boat tour.
It's been going on for decades now.
Mm-hmm.
That boat tour is awesome.
It is awesome.
Blind fish? Yeah, everywhere.
Blind fish everywhere. Mm-hmm.
Where and when have you been caving recently?
The most recent cave I was in Salt's Cave.
Oh, another Indiana classic.
Yeah, Salt's Cave. And that was just about a year and a half ago. Quite wet. It was one of the wettest times in Salt's Cave. And where you could still go in it.
And I guess they recently had a kind of a high water event that kind of changed things in there a little bit.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah. When were you in Salt's last?
It would have been at a Boy Scout with the Boy Scouts. I think it was probably about a year and a half ago, maybe 2 years ago.
So this event that I'm thinking of, I think, was fairly recent. Mm. Well, would you say that you have a favorite cave?
My favorite cave is Donaldson Cave in Spring Mill. Mm-hmm. That's where the caves I know best are in Spring Mill State Park.
Yeah, yeah.
My mom was from Mitchell, and we just explored that area. We were there at least 4 to 5 times a year and loved hiking and just exploring the caves on our own. It was before the day when we had any equipment or anything like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Then I went to university at IU. And
plenty of caves around there.
Hooked up. Yeah, I was in ROTC, so I was a bit of an outdoors girl and took several people down to Spring Mill, and then we went on our own into Hamer Cave and Donaldson Cave both. I don't think we were meant to. I think it was a little bit of illegal caving at that time, but they weren't very policed back in the day, if you will.
What brings you to Capers this weekend?
I came because I love Corydon. I wanted to see Corydon, and I know the cave systems down here are fabulous. So,
what do you plan on visiting?
I'm not sure yet. I haven't looked at the agenda. I haven't gotten that far yet.
We got a lot in store.
I'm going to pick now.
That's the so you've got anticipation fever then.
I do.
It's all exciting at this point.
I do.
What do we do? I don't know.
I know, and there's a free concert in Corydon town too. So there's lots of things going on down here.
Oh, I'm so glad that we were here this weekend. We got great weather. We're just blessed with a lot of good luck this weekend.
It's gorgeous. I can't think of a better temp because it's a little bit cooler than normal. And
yeah, we just got some cool air that flowed in today. It's like it's so comfortable out here right now.
But the setting too. I wasn't sure what the fairgrounds here would look like, and I'm very impressed with the geography around the campground here, and I think it's going to be really nice. It's going to be a great weekend.
Well, I'm glad you're here.
Yes,
thanks
me
for
too.
Talking.
Thank you.
Thanks for the chat, Kelly. Good times. Okay, let's hear from the first person to ever email me about the podcast. He said, "Talk to my dad." So I did. Had his dad, John Benton, on the podcast earlier this year.
Nick Benton. I'm from Huntingburg, Indiana, and I've been caving. Well, probably since I was 5 or 6 years old, something like that.
And you are the son of a previous guest.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's true.
John Benton, the cave historian, caver, author. And he just recently did a presentation at, what was it, Karstorama?
I believe so. He does presentations all over, so the last one probably was Karstorama.
On his Floyd Collins book. Well, so let's talk about you, though. What have you been up to lately, caving-wise?
lately, not as much as I have been in previous years, but almost all of my caving in my adult years has been primarily project caving with Indiana Speleological Survey, ISS, in
around
Binkley
here,
country.
Which
That's
is
right.
yeah,
we're right over it right now.
Yeah, we should say that we're at Indiana Cave Capers in Corydon, Indiana, and there's an entrance to Binkley, 500 feet that way.
You can't trip over a stone here and not be connected to Binkley in some part, some short shape or fashion.
I have to say that you were, I think, the first, if not one of the first people to email me about the podcast.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. Okay. It was almost a year ago now. I remember it was early September last year. And I got your email when I was on vacation in Boston, and it just brightened my day. I was like, somebody's listening. This is great.
Yeah, my full-time job is in sales, and I have a lot of windshield time, so I listen to a lot of podcasts, and then when I saw there was a caving podcast, I, you know, had to check that out, and it's a really well put together.
Well,
and
Al, I don't know about that, but it is in Indiana at the very least, which
true.
Is where you're from.
Very relevant to my interests, absolutely.
because of your email, I've gotten to talk with Gary Roberson, of course, your dad.
Mm-hmm.
Rand is on my list, Rand Hazlett,
yeah.
who was instrumental in helping us put together this Capers this weekend, which I think is going to be one of the more successful ones in recent years.
Yeah,
and we're so glad to have everybody out here. So what are you planning on doing this weekend, caving-wise?
I will be leading a trip with Shane Miles into the Guy Stover entrance and going back to the big borehole area, so I'm looking forward to seeing that again and taking some people who've never been back there. Me and Shane did that trip just a couple weeks ago just to kind of refamiliarize ourselves with the passages. And we had kind of mentioned the fact that really there's only been a handful of people to have ever gone back there. So whoever goes on that trip is going to be not necessarily going in Virgin Cave, but about as close as you can to it. And nice cave, too.
Yeah. Would you say that you have a favorite cave?
Oh, it's got to be Binkley, just for the sheer amount of memories and experiences, some good, some bad, but all very memorable, that's for sure.
I wouldn't say it's a rough cave, but there's a lot of mud, a lot of water, a lot of tough work in there.
Yeah, it's a labor of love. Somehow it kind of just gets in your blood and just the knowledge that there's so much virgin cave to discover. That's kind of what pushes all of us to keep coming back to Binkley.
Really anything around here. I mean, not just Binkley. I mean, I would say so many things around here. If you find it nearby to where we are right now, you're probably thinking, wow, I wonder if this connects to Binkley.
That's
true. At the very least, there's just caves everywhere, whether they connect to Binkley or not.
And with dye testing and things here in the last few years, things are connected into the larger Binkley proper.
Hydrologically.
That people, you know, even 10 years ago would have never even thought could be possible. So
I was going over the topo map the other night. We've got it set up here at the event, and someone was saying, okay, we put in dye here, and it came out way the hell down here, and I'm like, oh,
there's a lot of blank space in between to fill in the dots.
It's a 44-mile system and growing, and, I mean, with these dye traces, some people have been throwing out three-digit numbers as potential for how big this cave might be.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that. I think another thing that has led to the exploration of these areas, technology and caving equipment has allowed cavers to be underground and be comfortable, relatively speaking, for a lot longer than anybody could before. I mean, even when I was a kid, I'm 35 years old, but when I was hanging around my dad growing up, you know, I still had a carbide light and a hoodie, and you know, your body gets zapped after so many hours. But now, with, you know, wetsuits being as flexible as they are, and you know, everybody's caving lights, you know, most people don't even change their batteries on a huge long trip, and you know, lights are brighter than they've ever been, and you can just stay warmer for longer and be able to really push through some of those sleazy little muddy crawlways that people just overlook for years and years, and a lot of times they lead somewhere. A lot of times they don't, but sometimes they do.
Sometimes they do, and especially around here when you got just the right rock and at just the right elevation. Oh, it's so exciting around here. So do you have a favorite cave trip that you look back on and think, man, that one was the beast?
I think the obvious one would be the connection between what was then Binkley and Blowing Hole.
You were there for that. Yeah. That was significant because at the time, what, Blowing Hole was 7 or so miles?
Yeah, it was right around there. I couldn't tell you the specifics without looking it up. But
and then Binkley was 30-some?
Yeah, at the time it was, I think, mid-30s.
So it threw it into the 40-mile range.
Right.
We're at 44 now.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, this is hot caving country down here.
That's
right
true.
Now.
I mean, I'm not as familiar with other caving projects in other parts of the country right now, but I can't imagine anybody being more active and actively adding to the cave system like the ISS is right now. It's a good time to be a project caver down here.
Why would you say you do it? What is it you like about it? I mean, obviously, you know, your dad did it for years,
and
there's the family connection, but. I mean, I also know people who have kids that just, no, caving, that's something
Dad
does.
Well, I think that's a normal reaction.
Yeah.
That's a hard question to just answer in a quick sentence. I guess if you want to go back, when I started caving, it was just with my dad and things. Then when I got into high school, got my driver's license, caving was one of the last things on my mind. I more or less just stopped caving at that point. And then I went to college at Evansville at University of Southern Indiana and still really never actively caved by any means.
There's not much down there.
Yeah, I got involved in some other things. Ultimate Frisbee was kind of my passion in my younger 20s anyway. Fast forward a few years, life happens. I ended up moving back to the town I'm from originally, Huntingburg. Kind of in my mid-20s, I was probably 25 or 26, kind of looking for something to do. And just so happens, that was when Dave Everton was just starting to get the Binkley project trip, kind of resurrect that. So I had
And he was
access.
In there almost every weekend.
Oh, yeah, every single Saturday. So no matter what my schedule was, maybe I couldn't go one Saturday, but the next, I always knew there was going to be a Binkley trip on any given Saturday.
And he was always willing to take new people.
Right. New people who, you know, showed an interest in doing that type of caving. So the timing really worked out for me. So I got started kind of my second caving career with Dave Everton and kind of the rejuvenation of the ISS. So I've kind of started... seeing what the discoveries were and seeing Virgin Cave, and then I just kind of got addicted to that.
And it just bites and holds on, doesn't
That's
it?
True. That's true, yeah. Yeah, it helps, too, that I'm, compared to some of the other guys in the ISS, somewhat of a smaller stature, so I'm kind of a pusher.
Yeah.
So I was able to, you know, go
You're
on some
useful.
Of the... Yeah, I had a purpose. You know, I'm not the best sketcher, or, you know, I don't know how to do a whole lot of the survey equipment like some of the other guys, but damn it, I can fit in some small spots. So that's my role within the ISS. So, I've got to see a lot of areas that no other human has been before, and quite frankly, no human probably should ever be, but there I am. So that's that type of memory, I guess, or just those experiences are what keeps you coming back.
Well, welcome to Capers, and thanks for chatting.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Nick, great to run into you at Capers this year. Now, it's always nice to have regular contributors to your Grotto newsletter. A lot of grottos quit doing newsletters a long time ago because it's just so hard to get people to write up trip reports. It's hard to find somebody to put the thing together. But it seems like every month, this guy sends us pure gold to publish in the CIG newsletter.
I'm Chris Bell. I'm originally from Corydon, Indiana. Here where Cave Capers is this year. I've been caving for about 13, 14 years now, and right now I reside in Milltown, Indiana, in Crawford County.
And you do a ton of work just around here, right? Like, you've established some really great relationships with landowners and looked at some caves that haven't been visited in a long, long time, right?
Yeah, we found a whole lot of the quote-unquote lost caves that the ISS originally surveyed back in the 60s and 70s. We found new caves. One of the new caves we've recently found, we're going to lead a trip into this weekend as well. Great landowners. Well, we have a great relationship with them right now.
So coming to Capers this weekend, what do you plan on doing?
Well, first we're gonna play some music with Ron.
That's right, you're doing the jam tonight.
Yeah, we're gonna jam, we're gonna rock out, and then we are gonna do some caving. The one cave we are leading is to Buck Creek Lodge Spring Cave, which is our new cave.
Nice.
And we're gonna be taking 10 lucky people into that cave.
And you've found some new cave of the caves that that were already known for a long time, right? You've kind of pushed those a little bit.
Not necessarily. Most of the new stuff we found has been brand new.
Gotcha.
I'm fortunate enough that since I grew up in the area, I tend to know a lot of the local landowners. Sometimes we get lucky. I went up to a house a while back and ran into an old school teacher of mine. And so it just worked out perfect.
Yeah. Why do you think you like caving so much?
Thrill of adventure.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. It's Dick Blend said it's a cheap way to have a lot of fun.
It is somewhat cheap.
Somewhat cheap. Well, yeah, you can spend your life savings on gear. That's for sure.
Yeah, it is, but definitely an obsession.
You got to know where to stop.
Yep,
where that's concerned. What do you think is your coolest discovery so far?
Coolest one, I would say Buck Creek Lodge Spring Cave.
Yeah,
the one we're leading trip into this weekend. It's except for the incredibly tight entrance of about 7 to 8 inches tall. After that, it's multiple waterfall climbs to a nice stream passage to a big borehole that was all brand new. Yeah.
Wow. This is kind of a dumb question because it's so hard for people to decide, but would you say you have a favorite cave of all time?
Ooh.
One that you never get tired of visiting? Or are you one of these guys that likes to find one and then move on to the next one?
I do a lot of trying to see as many new caves as I can. If I have favorites, I would have to say Stevens Gap down in Alabama is a definite favorite. Up here in Indiana, I'm a big fan of Wyandotte.
Nice.
I started guiding there when I was right out of high school, and it's been my number one love ever since.
And you're a pretty prolific cave photographer, I would say. Is that why you like Stevens Gap and Wyandotte for that matter? Because there's a lot of pretty stuff to photograph?
Yeah, it's kind of fun to photograph all these different caves as well. And I would say that some of the caves sometimes give you the photos and sometimes they do not. Some of them are not that
sometimes
great.
Sometimes you got to fight for them.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Chris, welcome to Capers and thanks for talking to me.
Yeah, thanks for having us here.
And this is Chris and his band jamming on Friday night at Ron Adams Open Jam, which Ron does every year at Capers. Thanks for chatting, Chris.
We went down to Debella, now he's preaching down through. I said, yeah, whoa, sweet mama, your daddy's got them deep.
And thanks for all your contributions to the CIG News and Indiana caving in general. Okay, here we go. So I talked to Bonnie Armstrong twice at Capers, and admittedly, I didn't make the connection the first time that she was the Bonnie Armstrong. Forgive this first segment. As you'll hear later, we made up for it when she came back after midnight on Saturday, and you can tell it's after midnight. The party was pretty hopping. She was a very enthusiastic guest, as you'll hear, and we talked about all kinds of stuff.
I'm Bonnie Armstrong. I'm from Heber City, Utah, and I've been caving about 20 years, and I started caving here in southern Indiana.
You started in southern Indiana?
Yes.
What was your first cave then?
My first cave was Fisher Ridge.
Oh, okay, so Kentucky.
Indiana.
Oh, in Indiana. Oh, wait.
Oh, I'm sorry, in Kentucky.
In Kentucky.
But then I started, after that little introduction, then I started caving here.
What did you hit up a lot in Indiana? Where did you go?
So mostly around the Buckner area.
Nice.
And Cave River Valley.
As you say that, Dick Blends is sitting right behind you.
I know Dick Blends, sir.
And a lot of caves around there. Mm-hmm. Did you hit up a lot of them in the Garrison Chapel Valley?
Yeah, I think we hit just about all of them down there, and then started kind of spreading out from there. I think King Leo was my first vertical cave.
Oh, nice. You were sharing with me a little bit ago some interesting information about bats and about some research that's being done. Because bats, a lot of the functional calls that bats do for echolocation and things like that are beyond the range of human hearing. And so some people have recorded them and then sort of pitched them down so we can kind of hear what it might sound like. And then you said that some insects have evolved the ability to detect some of those calls in order to get away from the bats, I guess?
Right, yeah. So certain insects and even some frogs have developed different devices or techniques to hear these bat calls. And some can even jam the bat call, so the bat starts to zero in on an insect, and then they have a little structure on their side that can vibrate and create its own frequency that disrupts the bats.
So it's like a jamming, jamming
it's like
frequency.
An arms race. And so then the bats, you know, once those insects become harder to catch, they start to evolve. And so they become what's known as a whispering bat. So even though we can't hear the bat calls, if we could, at night, the sky would be just alive with screaming. So bats are, they're actually just screaming. The intensity or the amplitude of their call is really loud. They're up there just shouting.
Yeah.
So
thank goodness for the limited range of human hearing, right?
Exactly.
Otherwise, we'd never be able to fall asleep.
It would probably be terrifying.
It probably would.
Hear a sky full of screams.
This is a question I like to ask everybody. Do you have a favorite cave? Would you say that you have a favorite cave, one that you never tire of, that you always go back to and have a good time?
So I wouldn't say I'm going back to it right now, but Leche Guía has always been my favorite cave.
Oh, what an easy answer. How many times have you been to Leche?
I've done about 11 or 12 week-long expeditions.
Wow.
And probably about that many day trips.
How far in have you gone? Do you visit the same areas, or have you gone to different places each time?
No, I've actually camped in every branch of the cave.
Wow.
Probably most of my caving has been in the western branch.
Wow, yeah. Lots of good work being done there.
Yeah, pretty exciting.
And trips are getting longer and longer, as I hear.
They're getting longer. They're getting harder. A lot of the work now is climbing leads, and so I'm not a climber. But, yeah, they're just making tons of great discoveries by, you know, looking up, seeing a hole 100, 200 feet up. And, you know, there's some guys that, you know, they're both excellent cavers, excellent climbers, and they're the ones making the big discoveries now.
When was the first time you went into Leche?
I believe it was about 2003 or 2004.
Okay. And the most recent time?
About 2 years ago.
2 years ago.
On a day trip.
So you're on the list.
I was. I don't do as many hard trips anymore.
Gotcha.
But I still enjoy the day trips and some shorter trips.
Do you have a favorite area of Leche that you like to that you've gone through a lot, that you always like to visit?
Probably my favorite area, I've actually only been there once, is the Oasis Room.
Ah, yeah.
And I went there helping Peter Bosted and Danielle Chalou do some 3D photography.
Nice. Very, very cool. Well, Bonnie, thanks for talking to me.
Yeah, my pleasure.
All right, so it's Saturday night of capers. Is it past midnight now? It's got to be past midnight.
Yeah, I don't have a watch, but it feels like
it feels like it's got to be past midnight. It's 12:20 a.m.
Oh my goodness!
And I just wrapped up cleaning up in the presentation area. It was a long presentation, a long after presentation, long raffle. We've just got so much love here that it takes a long time to dish out. And so, Bonnie and I were talking just a second ago, and we got to talking about the Caving Accidents publication, which you helped to edit.
Yes, I'm the editor.
Yeah, you are the editor. You didn't help to edit. You edited
it. I did the editing.
It's you.
Yeah, I had help. I have other people that help me edit, but yeah,
and that's
my
one
name
of the,
gets on
that's
it.
That's one of the publications, when I've received it in the past, I've spent a lot of time with it. But this year especially, I spent an awful lot of time with it. You edited this year's edition. Have you edited any other ones that have come out?
Yeah, and usually, at least the ones I've edited and a few of the previous ones are inserted in the NSS News. And so I think the reason this one kind of stood out, it was the 50th anniversary of American Caving Accidents. And so
It was by itself kind of a publication.
So the NSS let me publish it as a standalone publication.
Yeah.
And so I think when it arrived in people's mailboxes, it just stood out a little more and got a little more notice than, you know, when it's in the news.
I spent hours with it.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
Admittedly.
Because I spent hours writing it, so.
And I would imagine that you spent a lot of hours putting it together. It's
yeah,
very
it's
well
about
done.
2 years worth of work.
Yeah, there are so many incidents in there. Some of them minor, some of them major.
Mm-hmm.
That I think if you really sit down with that publication, it makes you a better caver.
Well, that's the whole purpose.
That's the
of
idea,
it, right?
Of it, right?
Yeah, learn from other people's mistakes, and not just what they did wrong, but hopefully what they did right. There's a lot more, if you notice, a lot more successful self-rescues. You know, the more people get trained in cave rescue, the more they just find ways to, you know, accomplish the rescue themselves without having to have a big call out.
And so when I've been on long trips and I've gotten to that point, which I'm sure many cavers have gotten to, where they're like, man, if anything happened in here, what would we do?
Well, and that's a good answer, thing to think about.
Mm-hmm. The answer is don't let anything happen.
Sure. Uh-huh.
You know,
but
that is the number one answer.
Accidents do happen.
But
so
accidents
then,
do happen.
Yeah. You know, start planning ahead for what will we do if somebody were to get hurt here? You know, do we need to think about maybe some passage modification now rather than, you know, while somebody's hurt and needs out?
So in reading it, I've learned a lot. But I'm sure in putting it together and having years of experience behind you, just in caving in general, I'm sure even you picked up an awful lot in putting it together.
I'm actually a more timid caver since I've started working on ACA. Because, you know, all the time I'm like, well, you know, if these, you know, other cavers can get hurt doing this, then I can too. And, you know, when you're the caving accidents editor, it's really bad if you get hurt.
It makes you really
careful.
It's a little
harder to write about, yeah.
Well, okay, so I went to the National Cave Rescue Commission's orientation to cave rescue. It's a weekend thing.
Yep.
Saturday's a classroom day. Sunday's a mock rescue. Mm-hmm. Even just that, just a quick weekend, made me a safer, better caver, I think.
Yeah, and for the, you know, minimal amount of money that they charge for those classes.
Less than $50, I think I paid.
There's really no reason that every caver shouldn't take at least one NCRC course.
Yeah, if it's being offered in your area, even within, I would say, 4, 5, 6 hours drive time, mm-hmm. go.
Yeah.
Make a point.
Sure. And don't wait for an NCRC event to come to you. You know, you can request, contact the NCRC and say, hey, we would like some cave rescue training for our grotto or, you know, this region of cavers, and we'll set up classes and come to you.
If they get any kind of an indication that you or other cavers in your area would have any interest in learning any of this stuff, I mean, there is such a thing in caving as rescue junkies.
Mm-hmm.
people that this is what they do.
Yeah.
You know?
And there's a lot of people we see at rescue trainings that I've never seen on an actual cave trip. But, it's good to know that they're out there, they've got that training, and, you know.
And they got that bug.
They're ready to get in the cave when you need them.
There's a weird bug thing with rescue mm-hmm. people. And the folks like Anmar and like Jess and like Don Paquette, mm-hmm. who go in. And do these trainings, the national or the OCR or whatever level, they are people who want to be out there doing that.
Exactly. Yeah. And NCRC instructors, you know, will travel all over the country to provide these trainings. You know, my husband and I are in Utah, and in 2 months we're flying to Virginia to do a training for cavers out there.
So let's talk about the caving mm-hmm. accidents publication. You said it made you a little bit more of a timid caver.
Mm-hmm. Maybe careful. Maybe not
careful.
Timid.
Maybe not timid, but
yeah,
careful.
Yeah, definitely more careful.
I feel like it made me a more careful mm-hmm. caver in reading it. Just all the little things that can escalate.
Sure. And we oftentimes, like when we look at some of the major accidents and start analyzing them, we see that it's not just one thing that went wrong, but it's often we call it a cascade of errors. You know, if you forgot a piece of gear, and this person on your team is sick, and now this person's getting hypothermia. All that starts cascading into a much more serious event.
I feel like the awareness of that and in experience, of course, has made me a better leader of cave trips.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I lead a cave trip, first of all, the cave trips that I lead are no more than 4 to 6 hours.
Mm-hmm.
That I mean, that's it. I mean, I bring a lot of beginners. I bring a lot of friends who I want to try to get into it. And so I will pack first aid kit. I will pack extra water.
Excellent.
And that kind of thing. But in that, I encourage them to not pack much mm-hmm. because it only inhibits them. You know, and I want them to have a good time.
Sure.
And in them having a good time, I want to be the person who is responsible.
Right. And that's kind of a fine line with how much gear do you bring. So if you're the one,
if you're
the trip leader and you're carrying all of the first aid gear, what happens if you drop your pack down a pit somebody gets hurt? You know, there was an incident from Montana in our latest issue where all of the gear they needed for a 100-foot rappel at the end of their through trip got dropped into a pool of water and it sank. So now they have no gear to, complete the cave trip, but they were able to scavenge gear and, put some different things together, and they made it work. So
in putting all of that together, what do you think is something that would be applicable to almost any caver?
Thoughtful pre-planning. Yeah, so
simple as that.
One thing when you're on a big push trip, especially a vertical trip, I think people tend to start thinking about, some backup systems. Should we bring some extra pulleys and some extra prussics? But people leading horizontal trips, I think it's good for them to remember that if there is an accident on a horizontal trip, a lot of times that rescue now becomes a vertical rescue, because you might be able to climb up and over this 8-foot ledge as a healthy caver, but what if you have a broken leg? Well, now that's a vertical problem. Now we're going to need some type of system to get you up and over. So do you have to carry vertical gear and ropes on a horizontal trip? Not necessarily, but could you maybe have some of that stuff in the trunk of your car? Or, at the entrance of the cave, somewhere that it can be, reached and used in a timely manner.
One thing that we had ready for this Cave Capers, and this is Saturday night. Actually, this technically is Sunday morning
record
this, early Sunday morning. But one of the things that we had ready for Cave Capers this year, for the first time in its 64-year history, is a rescue kit.
Recommended. That's because somebody read American Caving Accidents and thought of that.
It was as recommended by Don Paquette and Anmar Mirza of the National Cave Rescue Commission, because they were at Capers last year and they said, if anything happened at Indiana Cave Capers, and we're one of many caving events that happen throughout the country, but they said if anything were to happen, at the time last year, the nearest rescue cache, like Ferno litter, or OSS or SCED, was hours away.
Sure.
And they said if anything were to happen, we would have to go and get that, bring it back, and then that would only increase the rescue time by a couple of hours. Whereas if we had a dedicated rescue cache on hand for Cave Capers, for the CIG, then we would decrease the rescue time.
Absolutely.
And so as recommended by Don Paquette, the CIG then earlier this year invested in a SCED and an OSS, which we will now have at every event that we sponsor.
So that's a nice example of thoughtful pre-planning.
Thoughtful pre-planning. Mm-hmm.
Something's
exactly.
Probably not going to happen, but if it does, it would be nice to have that gear here.
And as chairman of the CIG, I got some pushback from some members who said, this is a waste of money.
Oh, no.
We've never needed this. We will likely never need this. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you're probably right, but it never hurts to plan ahead for something like that. As it turns out, nothing happened this weekend, but it very well could have.
Because now we have the gear, right? So it never happens when the gear's handy.
Once the gear's here, it's never going to happen, which is even better than it ever happening and us being prepared for it.
Absolutely.
We always hope for it never to happen. So I feel like cavers are a prideful bunch. I know I'm proud to do this weird thing, this thing that really kind of, it scares me sometimes, but in the best way. I feel like some people have been in a situation where a rescue or some sort of rescue type activity, whether it be a self-rescue or an assisted rescue, would either have that happen and not report it, or have it happen and maybe encourage the other people not to tell anybody else. Don't tell anybody this happened.
Sure, right. Yeah.
How often do you think that happens?
So that question comes up a lot. We report anywhere from about 40 to 60 accidents a year. And I'm often asked, you know, well, how many accidents do you think go unreported?
Yeah, well, how could you possibly know that?
Right. So the larger accidents, I'm pretty sure I hear about those because you'll hear about those through the media.
Well, yeah,
right?
because other people are involved and they're going to say I was involved in a rescue. And
But, you know, little like, you know, oh, I twisted my ankle. Do I really need to report that? People might think that's not really that important. But or a near miss, you know, a rock fell and almost hit me. Do I really need to report that? And, you know, I would always encourage people, yes, go ahead and report it because we can always find something to learn. It also helps us with statistics and maybe thinking up new ways to help cavers stay safe. But I think the reason a lot of people don't report that is because they'd be embarrassed. And so, you know, I like to get out the word as much as possible that, you know, we can always leave people's names out of the report. I don't have to have the people's names. We do like to have their ages and the sex just for our statistics. I don't have to know the cave name if it's like a special project cave or it's on private property and they're worried about landowner relationships. That's why you see a lot of caves in the accident reports called unspecified cave. That means the people simply didn't want to tell us. And we're happy to leave out anything that people don't want reported within reason. And another thing I don't think a lot of people realize is once they send me a report, and I write it in my own words, you know, as a summary, I send it back to the person who reported it so they have a chance to fact check it, make sure I didn't put in any sensitive information. So they do have a say in what gets published.
So it does more good for you to say, yes, you can have my story. And if you are too prideful to identify yourself and say where it happened, mm-hmm. then at the very least, it's best if people know about it and people learn from it.
Right.
So by all means, let...
Please report it.
Please report
sure.
it. Let you know. Mm-hmm. Let someone know who can maybe then tell other people on their behalf or your behalf. Because that's why this thing gets published.
Exactly.
So that we can all learn and so that this happens less and less.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so. And we also encourage people to report incidents from years previous. So normally we have a section called previously unreported incidents, and they can go all the way back until like the 1950s. You know, I've gotten reports, and you know, we accept those too. They didn't make it into the last edition just because we only had we'd already contracted for a certain number of pages with the printer, and I simply ran out of room. So we didn't have any previously unreported, but I've got a list of about probably 20 that are, you know, already for the next issue.
I would imagine that certain incidents can happen that wouldn't necessarily take an assisted rescue, but would be traumatizing enough to those who are in the situation mm-hmm. for them to not really want to think about for several years.
Yeah.
And then later they could come back to it and say, okay, I want people to know about this so that they can learn about it.
Right.
So those can then be applicable.
Sure. Yeah. After, you know, they start telling them around the campfire for a few years, they become more comfortable with it. Yeah, this happened. I was dumb back then, you know.
But even then you wouldn't necessarily have to identify yourself if you're too embarrassed.
Right.
The
yeah.
idea is that we should all learn about this.
Sure. And, you know, and I'm happy to work with anyone on, you know, what they want printed, what they don't. And
so are you, I don't want to put you on the spot, but are you on the hook for the 51st edition?
Yeah, I'll be doing the next edition.
We won't call it the 51st.
Yeah, it'll be a two-year. So it'll be the 2017-2018 incident reports will get published in 2019. So it's always a kind of a year lag.
Sure.
And I'd really love it if there was any way that the NSS could find the money to do a separate publication like we did this year, where we could have all those extra articles on safety and technique.
As opposed to just being lumped in the NSS news?
Yes.
Yeah. Because
mm-hmm.
Not
that Dave Bunnell doesn't do a great job when he puts, you know, the ACA in the news, but I think having a standalone publication, people notice it more and they're more likely to read it.
When I got it, I picked it up and I knew what I was getting and I just couldn't
mm-hmm.
stop. I couldn't
yeah.
stop. And not only were there interesting articles,
mm-hmm.
but there were also
It's late. All kinds of things are happening around here.
There are, yes. We're tearing down registration. There's all kinds of things going on. Yes. There were also some entertaining things, dare I say.
Mm-hmm.
There was a bear chase somewhere. What was that?
I believe it was in New Jersey.
New Jersey, that's right.
A scoutmaster took some kids to a cave, and for some reason he had a rock camera with him, which makes me think he was up to no good. Yeah, and as he started to enter the cave, a bear grabbed him by the leg, a bear that was in the cave, and pulled him in the cave and chewed on him a little bit and then backed off.
Chewed on him just a little bit.
You know, yelled at the kids, go get help, go get help. So it took a while to get help, and they had a dog with them that kind of eventually helped chase the bear off. But, yeah, animal encounters in caves, you just never know.
Just one, if perhaps one of the better, but just one example of something you can learn from, but something that's also entertaining in the Caving Accidents publication and the segment of the NSS, of course, which will be next year.
Mm-hmm.
Bonnie Armstrong, thank you for coming on the Caving Podcast at about one, what is now almost one in the morning.
My pleasure. Time for a beer.
On Saturday, August 6th. Thank you. I got beer right here. You want one?
I do. Thank you.
Bonnie, thanks for taking the time to chat with me at Capers. I did hook her up with a cold beer. We were sitting right next to the cooler. It was more than deserved for spending so much time with me and sharing that with us here on the podcast. And thanks to everybody who came. I hope you can make it back to Indiana Cave Capers next year or come for the first time. Well, that's it for this month. Thank you so much for listening. New episodes come out on the first of every month, and we should be back to our regular format next month. I've got a great interview planned for October. Hope to see you then. In the meantime, catch up on episodes you may have missed on Podomatic, iTunes, or Google Play. Don't forget to support the podcast by supporting our sponsors, Swago at swagogear.com and the Organic Robot Store on Etsy. And of course, stay current on your grotto and NSS dues. And if you don't already belong to a grotto, find one at the National Speleological Society website, caves.org. I'm Matt Pelser, chairman of the Central Indiana Grotto. Until next time, kill nothing but time.